Dunn back in behind his own net. He gave it away. Far side, Shifley out in front of shot. They score! Nick Patan going toward the net on a steal inside of that St. Louis end. They gave it away right to Shifley. Wrong guy. He spots Patan going to the post. Perfectly placed onto his stick. He just puts it on a redirect pass. Jake Allen at Winnipeg opens up the scoring. It's 1-0 for the Jets.
That goal at the 10:03 mark of the first period last night proved to be the game-winning goal. Connor Hellebuyck, 34 saves for the shutout. The Jets with a commanding 4-0 victory over the St. Louis Blues Friday night in Missouri. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live with you for the next 3 hours. A jam-packed show. We'll look back, of course, at last night's Jets-Blues game, get you set for this evening's Jets-Stars game, and a comprehensive trade deadline preview, as it is slightly over 48 hours away from now. 48 hours plus 3, 51 hours until the NHL trade deadline occurs. And, of course, that is the focus of the hockey world as well. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday afternoon, a little bit later than our usual start time, but c'est la vie, and it was a good performance last night for the Winnipeg Jets as they start their three consecutive games against Central Division rivals.
Yeah, the first 7 or 8 minutes of that game looked pretty heavily in favor of the opposition there for the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, the Winnipeg Jets weathered the storm. Josh Morrissey takes that early penalty, Dave. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, for me, you know, is, again, the story of the game. That whole line, Connor, Shifley, Wheeler, just continues to be dominant. I think it's the best line in hockey right now. But, you know, Blake Wheeler, you know, he puts a shot on net that, you know, looked like Jake Allen was going to make the save there. But then, you know, he puts the puck on net on the power play. Kyle Connor just bangs away at it. And that was the story for me. The Jets were just sharper in every area. And, you know, the St. Louis Blues right now, Drew, are reeling. 5 losses in a row.
Yeah.
One of those was in the extra frame. But they're 0-4-1 in their last 5 games, and Dallas has passed them.
Minnesota has passed them.
Like, right now, the St. Louis Blues aren't competing for first in the Central anymore. They're just trying to hang on to a wild card spot in the Central Division in the Western Conference. So, I mean, give the Jets all types of credit here. I mean, sure, the third period, you know, it was all St. Louis Blues. I forget how many shots they had, 15 or 16 shots. But, I mean, that's score effects, right, Dave?
Yep.
I mean, the St. Louis Blues are already out of that game. When
yeah.
Patrick Laine scores that goal, and I thought it was hilarious, by the way, on the broadcast with Dennis, when he said, you know, I didn't even see any room. And then Dennis said, come on, Patrick, you're supposed to say that you picked that corner. And he said, well, I'm not a liar.
Yeah.
I thought that was very funny. And, you know, the Jets entered the arena, Dave, you know, wearing their funny suits. And I just thought the Jets went into that game with the right mindset. And from the start of the game, and sure, you know, the Blues had their chances, especially on the power play early in the first period, but I just thought the Jets were the more focused team and the better team, and they just continue to score goals in bunches. And, you know, it's 3-0 after one. We know that the Blues have had their struggles this year at home, and for me, you know, the game was almost over after 20 minutes with the way Connor Hellebuyck was playing.
To me, yeah, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with what you said, Dave, and we'll get you in here. I mean, to me, the key turning point, I mean, nice for the Jets to get the opening goal there, especially after they've been sort of on their heels for the first 7 or 8 minutes of the game, as you alluded to, Ezzy. And then Nick Patan on the you know, the Shifley forces the turnover. Chris Butler blows a tire, and he finds Nick Patan all alone, and he makes no mistake. So the Jets are feeling good about themselves. It's only 1-0, though, at that point. To me, the real difference maker is the Blake Wheeler goal, his 18th of the season, which comes 45 seconds later. I mean, that's not a goal that Jake Allen can let in. Jake Allen's positioning on that goal is absolutely horrendous. He's way over on the short side rather than square to the shooter. And Wheeler's like, okay, you're going to give me half the net, even though I'm not, you know, a prototypical sniper. Blake Wheeler's still going to score that goal when the goalie is misplaying it so badly. Jake Allen, you heard the boo birds come down from the crowd in St. Louis. He's been pretty lousy all year for the Blues. Just the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde nature of the St. Louis Blues. It's hard to believe that this is the team that 2 weeks ago came into Bell MTS Place and absolutely laid a whooping on the Jets. And since then, they've just been in this tailspin.
Yeah, and kudos to Blake Wheeler to keep that play going, because previously, twice on that shift, Josh Morrissey got high-sticked, and then I think he got hook down. So, I mean, there were two instances where the Jets could have been looking around, standing around, because it appeared like some of the Blues were thinking that there was going to be a penalty called against them. And Blake Wheeler kept the play alive. And as you just touched on, Drew, he scored the goal. Yeah, it's a problem for the Blues, the goaltending right now. And, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko, after the game, there were the Bronx cheers every time Jake Allen started to make some saves. And after the game, Vladimir Tarasenko said to the said to Jeremy Rutherford and some of the other media in attendance that, you know, it's embarrassing that the fans are ripping on the goaltending, and that it was a collective team letdown. You can't just blame one guy. And that's kind of what you would anticipate a forward would do, would come to his goalie's defense. Because, you know, I mean, again, we've seen what happens with goaltenders. You know, we've seen Jake Allen be left behind off on a road trip, right? So you've got to be careful with the psyche of these guys. I mean, there's a whole, you know, cottage industry that's been built up about the psyche of goaltenders. So it's good on Tarasenko to try and draw some of the fire away from his goalie and onto himself. But I think the Blues right now, as you just guys touched on, are in a complete tailspin, and the Jets took advantage. And good on the Jets for having, you know, started a little bit of slowly on the road, but again, built up and took control of that game.
And Dave, there were a lot of people in St. Louis that were thinking that Carter Hutton was going to start that game, not only because he had the shutout against the Jets earlier in the season, but he's been the better goalie
all year long
of the two as of late specifically. And you could even argue, yeah, I agree with you, Drew, maybe all season long he's been the better goalie, not just numbers, but, you know, he's been getting the job done for the Blues in net. And, you know, I thought, again, the special teams come through. And even in the second period, when the Jets took the high sticking penalty, I forgot who took that high sticking penalty. Might have been Matt Hendricks on Colton Parayko. The Jets killed that penalty off. And even though the game is 4-0 at that point, they didn't give the Blues really any opportunity to get back in the game. And then in the third period, when Kulikov took a penalty, I think the Blues had 7 shots on that power play. And don't get me wrong, I mean, the game's over. If they score there, it's 4-1, and they still have to get 2 goals to really get back into it. But I thought the penalty kill was sharp all night, and specifically Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele. And I hate to sound like a broken record here, because we come on every week and we seem to talk about how good Wheeler and Scheifele are playing, but they really are. I mean, they, to me, were the two best players on the ice. And you have Vladimir Tarasenko out there, you have Jaden Schwartz out there, Braden Schenn. I mean, the Blues aren't short on talented and skill. Yeah. And to me, it was Scheifele and Wheeler again who were the best players on the ice. And, you know, not to take anything away from Kyle Connor, you know, he gets a greasy goal there in the first period, and he continues
the
to...
The quietest 21 goal scorer in the entire NHL.
What's he up
22
to?
Now, pardon me,
what's
22.
What's he up to right now, Dave? 22. Fourth in the league in rookie goal scoring?
Fifth. Oh, in rookie goal scoring? I think he might be... I'll have to check. I know he's fifth in scoring overall.
Yeah,
and nobody's catching Barzell, obviously, but Kyle Connor's doing himself a service with up to 40 points now on the season.
Especially for a guy who didn't start the season with the Winnipeg Jets. You mentioned Wheeler and Scheifele were two, you know, great players for the Jets on the ice last night. Connor Hellebuck picks up his 6th shutout of the season, his 3rd in his career against the Blues, which is amazing because he's had all of 6 starts against the St. Louis Blues. So this is a goaltender who has his opponent's number when his opponent is the St. Louis Blues. Here's what Connor Hellebuck had to say post-game with regard to why he's had such success against the St. Louis Blues.
Connor, how do you feel about playing tomorrow? Are you good to go
tomorrow? Yeah, I'll always be ready when my name's called, but it's coach's decision, and if he decides on another guy, well, I'm going to be there to support him.
Connor, it's your 3rd shutout in 6 career starts against the Blues. What is it about that team that you play so well against them?
Well, I think our team pairs well with them. They got a lot of skill over there. They're nice and gritty, and I think we like that style of game. We like to get in the mud and really work and grind teams down, and I think they fit right into that game role. And like I said, the guys always seem to play really well in front of me.
You know, Hellebuck talks about grittiness and the Jets were getting in the mud, as he said in that quote. The Jets outplayed the St. Louis Blues last night. I thought the 50-50 puck battles, the Jets won those predominantly. Again, after the first 8 minutes, the Jets were a little bit slow in that first 8 minutes, but after that, after they sort of got their skating legs, after Patan scored to make a 1-0, and then especially 45 seconds later, after Wheeler scored, the Blues just wilted. They had absolutely nothing in the tank. They had no give to come back against the Jets. They've just been maddeningly inconsistent, and they were very similar last year, but then you remember, they picked it up and got it going in that first round against the Minnesota Wild and stunned the Wild in the first round of the playoffs. So the St. Louis Blues team is so erratic. But when they're good, they're one of the best teams in the league. But when they're bad, there's, like you saw them last night, they're pretty bad.
And that's why you have to give the Jets credit, because they're coming off of a disappointing loss to the Kings to end the homestand.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you mentioned, Patan gets the ball rolling, but they score shortly after. Blake Wheeler, you know, puts the puck on net. And sure, maybe Jake Allen would like to have that one back, but that's a veteran goal scorer, in my opinion, a veteran goal. And then they score late in the first period with Kyle Connor capitalizing on their power play opportunity. And we talked about it. I mean, usually in the NHL, especially when you're a good defensive team like the Jets are this year, it's really tough to come back down 3-0 to a team that wants to get back in the win column, right? So I agree with you, Drew. I mean, the Jets definitely deserve this game, and you wonder here, as you mentioned at the top of the show,
yeah,
with about 48 hours to go before the trade deadline, I think Doug Armstrong has to bring in some goal-scoring help, because we talked about it on the Wednesday show. I know you weren't there, Drew, but Jake Allen just hasn't been getting the run support. I think it's now 9 of his last 14 starts, the Blues have scored one goal or less. And, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko can't score 2 or 3 goals every night. So I would be surprised if Doug Armstrong doesn't make a move before Monday.
Well, and of course, we will talk comprehensively about the trade deadline throughout the course of the program. But that's to your point, Ezzy. You know, they have been linked to Mike Hoffman. They've been linked to Alex Galchenyuk if the Habs decide to go that way.
Hoffman makes a lot of sense on that team.
On, you know, put him on the wing there. You know, in St. Louis, I think there's he's a goal scorer.
Yep.
So that's exactly what they'd be looking for. So it would not surprise me in the least bit if you ended up seeing a guy like Mike Hoffman go to St. Louis. But this Blues team is just very, like I said, they're maddeningly inconsistent. They're in a bit of a downstretch right now, just like they were, you know, upward trajectory 2 weeks ago against the Jets. And to the Jets' credit, they take advantage. You win 4-0. You really choke out the opposition in that you don't really give them an opportunity. And, you know, that's exactly what the Jets want when you're going back-to-back, a relatively easy game when you have to play tonight in Dallas.
Well, no, I was just going to say, and to me, it's important for the Jets because Jets haven't been as good on the road as they have been at the Bell MTS Place. So the fact of the matter is that for the Jets, knowing that they've got 3 tough games going,
mm-hmm,
you know, obviously against Central opponents, last night in St. Louis, tonight in Dallas, and then home to Nashville on Tuesday, the fact of the matter is that you really needed to have a good feel game. And I think to me, that is exactly what they had last night, like as he touched on. This is a team that, you know, sure, you can lament if you're a Blues fan how your team played, but the fact of the matter is I thought that the Jets really imposed their will after that first flurry that St. Louis had to start the game, that the Jets really imposed their will when it mattered for the, you know, remainder of that first period, the second, and you know, obviously, like you said, in the third, they're just holding on. They don't really care because at that point it's 4-0. There's,
yeah,
nothing really worth wasting your energy over.
Quickly, before we go to break, Paul Maurice spoke about him last night, just how impactful and how good Dustin Byfuglien's been playing as of late.
Yeah, he's on a 5-game point streak, but I also have to give credit to Toby Enstrom. And Drew,
yeah,
you know, over...
No, you haven't been a huge fan.
Since the last 7 years, over the last 7 years, I should say, since the Jets have been back, you know, I've criticized Toby Enstrom, not saying that he's a bad defenseman. I just, you know, don't necessarily think he's a $5.5 million a year defenseman, and I think he's got his defensive shortcomings, but, you know, the last, let's say, you know, 4 or 5 games, I mean, Toby Enstrom has been really good paired up beside Dustin Byfuglien, and, you know, that's a pairing that we've seen for many years now.
Yeah, the last 7 years, basically.
Toby Enstrom's been very solid. He's been that steadying influence on Buff, and you know, Buff, to me, just looks like a much more confident offensive player. We know earlier in the season, you know, he was struggling to put the puck in the net, even though he was getting his chances. But Buff has been incredible, not just offensively. He's been very responsible defensively,
mm-hmm,
playing more minutes with Trouba out of the lineup.
You are listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. When we come back, we're going to talk about the trade deadline, little more than 48 hours away. You're listening to the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
I believe the Jets are in on a lot of people. I believe the Jets were in on Grabner. I think the Jets have been talking to the Rangers about Rick Nash. I think the Jets have been all over the Ottawa Senators on Derek Brassard. Whether they get guys or not remains to be seen. You know, the situation with Brassard is an interesting one because I think Pittsburgh's all over him too.
That was from yesterday morning's big show. Bob McKenzie on with Jim, Troy, and Brandon.
Pittsburgh got him.
Yeah, we all know how that played out last night. Derek Brassard, who the Jets, he was the apple of the Jets' eye, if you were to believe a lot of things, ends up going to the Pittsburgh Penguins via the Vegas Golden Knights. And we'll break down that trade in its entirety a little bit later on in the show. But right now, we want to talk about the Jets trade deadline, how you're a little more than 48 hours away, you know, and things are heating up when it comes to the trade talk throughout the NHL. You're listening, of course, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit Linden MarketDentalCenter.com.
I think the Penguins are hoping that Brassard's going to make the puck ting quite a bit for them here down the stretch.
He's had a lot of playoff success, including last season for the Senators against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the playoffs. And, of course, he had a long, lengthy playoff runs with the New York Rangers. You know, the idea of Brassard coming to Winnipeg, did that make sense to you, Ezzy? Obviously, we know it didn't come to fruition. The Jets were outmaneuvered, and I'm not saying outmaneuvered necessarily in the negative sense, but what happened is that the Vegas Golden Knights got involved and offered to use their salary cap space, which is an asset.
They have a lot of salary cap space.
They have a ton
space.
Of salary cap yep. space. So they use their space as an asset
yep.
to hurt one of their rivals,
right.
in-conference rivals. And it makes sense to do it. If you have salary cap space, use it. It's an asset just like a draft pick or just like a player.
And Vegas gets Ryan Reeves, and they also get, what was it, a fourth rounder?
Something like that. So they get a fourth rounder for their troubles, and they get Ryan Reeves from Pittsburgh for right. their troubles.
Because they needed another Manitoban on their team.
That's right. They didn't have quite enough.
Eakin and Leipzig weren't enough.
Eakin, Leipzig, Kelly McCrimmon, of course, the assistant general manager. He was on the show with us last Saturday. So Vegas uses their salary cap space to prevent the Jets from getting Derek Brassard. Brassard ends up going to Pittsburgh, where he's going to be a fantastic third-line center, you would assume, for the Penguins. You know, is that what the Jets need, though, as we sit here about, you know, 50 hours or so away from the trade deadline? Another centerman, Adam Lowry, out probably for another couple weeks is what we're hearing. You know, who knows what his health status is fully going to be when he returns, given that he's missed really a large chunk of this season.
We're still not quite sure what the injury is.
We don't even know what the injury is fully.
Right.
Andrew Kopp, he's playing up the middle with yep. Laine and with Ehlers. Derek Brassard, you know, a skilled player, certainly would look good playing up the middle there with Laine and Ehlers. So now that Brassard is off the table, is a third-line center what the Jets need to acquire in the next 50 hours?
Yeah, if you've read Gare Joyce's book, Derek Brassard was one of the protagonists of that book, you know, detailing the process of Columbus drafting him sixth overall. I believe it was back in 2006. So Derek Brassard is a very, very good player.
Mm-hmm.
And, Drew, I don't think you're ever going to lose when you acquire a player like Brassard, because he's had a successful NHL career, both with the Rangers and the Senators. He was excellent for Ottawa in last year's playoffs. He's been very good for the Rangers in past years in the playoffs. And I think it comes down to, are you confident with what you have up the middle, especially playing with Laine and Ehlers? And we talked about it on last week's show. Andrew Kopp is playing with Laine and Ehlers now, but I think ideally you'd like him playing with Brian Little on that second line, even though at 5-on-5 they've had their struggles, right? So to answer your question, yeah, they could use a Derek Brassard. And for me, it was always, what are you going to give up? And I'm really curious to see what was on the table from Chevy, because I imagine it was some combination of a first-round pick
mm-hmm.
and a prospect, whether that's a Nick Patan or Marco Dano, if you want to call Marco Dano a prospect. He's still young.
Well,
but the point is, it was most likely a first-round pick and a player, maybe even two players. So, I mean, was Sean Mathias involved with that trade? Was there another pick? Maybe it was a first rounder, a second rounder, and Nick Patan. Maybe
it was one of the Jets goaltenders,
well,
Jamie Phillips, perhaps, because, you know, Ottawa ends
up. They were probably asking for more than Jamie Phillips. I imagine Eric Comrie's name was in there.
I would imagine so, because Ottawa ends up acquiring from Pittsburgh as part of the trade.
By the way, I don't think that the Jets and True North are at all interested in moving Eric Comrie. Dave and I were, in fact, talking about this before the show. I mean, Eric Comrie's having a great year. I mean, this is a goaltender of the future for the Jets. You know, you look two or three years down the road, and Hellebuck and Comrie are most likely going to be your goaltenders for some time to come. But the point is, the deal didn't get done, and I think when you're talking about the Jets right now, Do the Jets need more offense? We just saw them score four goals against the St. Louis Blues. The game before the game against the LA Kings, it was against the Panthers and the Avalanche. What did they score? 13 goals, Dave?
Yeah.
In those two games? So, I mean, I don't necessarily know that the Jets need to add offense. They're a top three, top five offensive team. I don't know what the numbers are right now. I didn't check them today. But the point is they're a top offensive team in the league. Now, the point is when you're going into the playoffs – and you're going up against the Nashvilles. You're going up against the Dallases. When you get to the Western Conference Final, you might be playing Vegas or Anaheim. Do you think what you have up the middle can compete with Anaheim, who has Ryan Getzlaff, Ryan Kessler, Adam Henrique, Antoine Vermette, right? So I can see the argument for getting a center right now. It's obviously not going to be Derek Brassard.
Yeah.
But I think you can make the argument that, you know, you could easily add another left-shot defenseman, and that's really what you need. So as far as I'm concerned, if the Jets went into the playoffs with this roster, I think they could beat anybody.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about the Jets' plans ahead of the NHL trade deadline coming up Monday afternoon. Of course, comprehensive coverage here on the station all day long, wrapping it up with a special edition of NHL This Week on Monday. Dave, your thoughts on the Jets and the trade deadline?
No, I was going to say that Scott Billick from NHL.com reported that on the Brassard situation, yeah, there were three pieces that were involved from the Jets' perspective. So what those were specifically, we don't know, obviously, but that's what Scott's reporting had, was that there were going to be three pieces, which you would be led to believe it would be a first-round pick, perhaps a roster player, and obviously a draft pick. That would be my inclination to believe, but again, I don't know anything specifically.
Yeah, that would make sense given what, you know, given the price that that Pittsburgh paid.
Right.
Never mind the whole salary retention part with Vegas getting in there to hurt their conference rival in the Jets. And again, a lot of people are sort of wondering about that, raising eyebrows, you know, why would Vegas do it? Well, you have the asset in the salary cap space. You don't want Brassard to end up in Winnipeg because you think maybe now this makes Winnipeg better than you are if they're not already better than you are. So you use it. Why not? It's 1 year. It's a little bit of money. It just makes logical sense from my perspective.
But I was going to say, like, in terms of getting a guy like Brassard, there's no question you want a center, especially one who has playoff experience, because that's what everybody is talking about in terms of what is lacking on this Jets team, is the fact that you have a lot of guys who have ever, you know, or you're limited, in terms of number of guys who have a lot of playoff experience on this team. So to me, you get a guy like Brassard who, again, I mean, that would give the Jets, in my mind, the top nine, top three lines in the NHL by far, because like every one of those lines is going to be lethal and can score.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you really allow yourself to create that shutdown opportunity with Armia, Kopp, Lowry, and Tanev,
Hendricks,
I'm saying, like, that would be, you know, ideally you have Lowry as your fourth line center, and then really you have someone like Brassard who has that experience to kind of continue to create offense with guys like Ehlers and Laine. So to me, that would have been a good move for Winnipeg. But again, like I said, I'm with Ez in the sense that I think that there's a lot this group can still do.
TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin talked about the Brassard issue vis-a-vis the Jets and the trade and everything else last night. Here's what Dave Poulin had to say on SportsCenter last night.
Jets were in on the Derek Brassard trade talks, may have got gamed out of it by the Vegas Golden Knights. What do you think they should do before the deadline?
That actually surprised me when I heard that they were in on it. I really like this hockey team the way it is. And if you're going to add maybe another depth defenseman, but they've got some key guys out with injuries right now. You've got Adam Lowry, you've got Brandon Tanev, you've got Jacob Trouba. Picture those three guys going in. And while they've been out, Jack Roslovic has been really good. Nick Batan has been really good. So now you've developed even more depth. And I was around that team a lot through the first part of the season. I did a number of games. And I saw the way they are together, the chemistry and everything. I'm not sure I'd mess with that. I really like the organic growth. I love the job they've done building this hockey club. And I think it's one of the favorites in the West, as is.
Craig Button started the train. Can I get you on it for Blake Wheeler for the Hart Trophy?
Are you on the train? Oh, I've been there a long time, trust me. He's one of the best players in the NHL. And the way he drives that team is highly, highly successful.
By the way, I didn't hear that clip before I came on today. So, I mean, Dave Poulin obviously is kind of on that same train of thought that,
yeah,
I'm on. And, you know, now that we know that the Jets are after a center, Drew, you know, Max Domi's name is out there. And Max Domi makes a lot of sense between Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. Cool. If Max Domi is your third-line center.
And we know, or at least allegedly, the Jets were going to draft Max Domi right before. They had the pick right after Arizona, and Arizona, yep, drafted him. You know, and the Jets ended up swooping in and getting Josh Morrissey in that, yep, draft. So we know that that Max Domi has been an apple of the Jets' eye previously. And
another Domi in Winnipeg.
Well, you know, you buy low on a guy like Max Domi, who's had an awful year in Arizona. I'm willing to bet that's more to do with the Coyotes themselves. Than
you might have to give up a little bit more, though.
I think you would have to give up a little more, bit more, but you're adding a young player who's still got a lot of a future ahead of him.
Born in Winnipeg.
It makes a lot of sense. It'll be interesting. I mean, a lot of people, as Dave Poulin just alluded to on that clip, say the Jets don't need to do anything. I fall in the side that I think they need to add to their top nine. I think they need another center up the middle there. I think their wingers are okay, especially now that Jack Roslovic has emerged as being a viable part of this Jets roster. But between now and Monday afternoon, I do think the Jets need to add at least another piece. And even if it is only a winger, I think you can mix and match and you can probably make it work. But right now, I think they're just a step behind the Nashville Predators when it comes to being the best team in the Western Conference.
The Lightning.
Well, the Lightning, if you look at the overall league, sure. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff will still do something between now and Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290. Saturday afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we pay him in Illegal Curve sandwiches. We're pleased to welcome to the program Jason Bell. Jason, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, when is delivery? I'm waiting. I keep looking at the window in EK here. I see nothing.
Well, I think being out in EK, you might be a little bit outside our delivery window, but I think Ezzy will be there sometime between the show ends at 3 and the game starts at 6, so I'd say your window is between 3 and 6.
Yeah, Jason, we were going to send...
I've had Manuk walk right by my house. I know where he
is. We were going to send Skip the Dishes, but I'm just going to make a home delivery.
Yeah, he's a special delivery service there. Of course,
well, good to talk to you anyway.
Yeah, the problem, though, is as soon as Ezzy comes to your house, he then starts to squat in your house, and he stays there for days
and
on end.
And the sandwich is half eaten.
That's right, and the sandwich is half eaten. Jason obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets, a big win last night against the Blues, but that's sort of been overshadowed by the trickery or the chicanery of the Vegas Golden Knights in trying to prevent the Jets from getting Derek Brassard. They instead facilitate a trade between the Senators and the Penguins. Your thoughts on the move by the Vegas Golden Knights using their salary cap space to keep Derek Brassard in the Eastern Conference?
Well, old-time Winnipeg Jet fans will know that George McPhee has always had it out for that organization. I mean, if you guys are probably not old enough to remember that he was traded to the Winnipeg Jets in the early 80s and would not report. And that's he was one of only a couple of guys that ever did that. There was a defenseman named Stefan Persson that also did that with the Islanders. They just were not prepared to come to this city. And that was before the days of the no movement, no trade. They just put their feet down and said, we're not coming. So we should have known that George McPhee is not a big, huge fan of the Winnipeg Jets organization. But you'd think that maybe Kelly McCrimmon would have thrown the Winnipeg Jets a bone being from this neck of the woods. But you're right, fellas. It was, we're not always privy to what's going on in the background, but it sounds like Winnipeg Jets GM Cheveldayoff was really going hard for Derek Brassard, and he's the kind of center iceman that I think they were looking to add as far as some offense up front to that top nine. But lo and behold, the Vegas Knights kind of had their own plans, and they swung a goofy deal that took the better part of probably about, 7 or 8 hours to come together. And he's with Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's looking for the three-peat with they bolstered up front, and Vegas has strengthened their size and their physicality with another Winnipegger, Ryan Reeves. There's a whole lot of twist to this thing.
Jason, now that we know that the Winnipeg Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff were going hard after Derek Brassard, does it make sense that if the Jets do bring someone in, it's going to be a center?
Well, you know, we talked about that with my cohort this morning, Mike McIntyre, and it just seems to me like it makes sense to strengthen that spine of the organization where you know that they've already got Mark Scheifele and Brian Little up the middle. They've got Adam Lowry there who's, you know, is supposed to be coming back within the next couple of weeks. Certainly he hasn't been really skating yet, but the plan that we've been told is that he's certainly going to be back for playoff time. So if that's the case, it just seems to stand to reason that they'd want to beef up that center ice position on that third line, or whatever sort of version of that third line may come to fruition when all the guys are healthy. I mean, you look at what they've done with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine on the wings with Andrew Kopp. And I mean, you do not want to denigrate a guy like Andrew Kopp, who's done, you know, in some people's minds a whole lot more this season. Obviously the offense has not been there for him, and he'd be the first one to kind of shrug his shoulders and look to the sky and wonder why the puck hasn't gone in for him a little more. But he's worked real hard, and he's got a good plus minus for a guy who was playing with Tanev and Lowry earlier, who really didn't create a lot of offense, and yet their plus minuses were good because they were these shutdown guys. So, you know, again, you don't want to denigrate a guy like Andrew Kopp, but is he really the right fit for two dynamic young wingers? And I think that's why the real push to get a Derek Brassard, and maybe that's why the search continues. The problem is that it really drops off after that at the middle, and you guys know this. And, you know, you just look at the TSN trade bait list there, and you're looking at a guy like Pekanik, and you're looking at guys like and Derek Ryan. I mean, Pajot has lots of contract left. Derek Ryan is a UFA from Carolina, but I was just looking this morning, he had a point in 12 games. So is Pekanik the guy that's sort of next up the middle? And, you know, his numbers aren't terrific, and Montreal fans would probably say take him in a heartbeat, but you never know with a guy like that if he's just been beaten down so much with that organization that he's just maybe a new change of scenery would be exactly what he needs to spark something in the guy who's probably still wants to play a little bit of hockey and would be playing on a winner and playing for his next contract. So maybe he's a guy that Kevin Cheveldayoff is zeroing in right now.
You know, Jason, we don't know who the starter will be for the Jets tonight in Dallas. It may be Connor Hellebuyck would be making, I believe, his 11th straight start or 12th straight start for Winnipeg. And, of course, he wouldn't be taking the morning skate because he's been taking those off, so to stay fresh, as he said. Do you think the Jets are running a risk, though, of tiring him out before the playoffs begin?
Yeah, I didn't like the way that he played the other night against L.A., and he was the first to say that he you know, maybe was battling fatigue a little bit more than you know, battling pucks, and also he had kind of changed up that routine of he did take a skate that day, and then of course he didn't skate yesterday, and yeah, you know, he wasn't that busy yesterday, and I would have sort of bet dollars to donuts that they would have gone back to him today for certain in Dallas, but then of course he got busy, and he played awfully good in the first 7 or 8 minutes when I believe the St. Louis Blues had 6 or 7 shots on him before the Jets even mustered one shot. Then he was really had an easy time of it until the third period when he ends up with 34 shutout, so which is number 6 for him on the year. So to answer your question, you know, this will be 52 starts, I think, this season. That was probably the number that they had designated for Steve Mason when we go back to, you know, October, the first week of October. This may not be exactly what they had in store. And that was maybe the other night was the first crack of, oh, we saw a little bit of fatigue on the part of number 37. But I really do think he's going to play today. Do I think he should play today? Probably not. I think Michael Hutchinson is ready to go, is healthy and wants to play. And they've got a big game against Nashville, which you know Connor Hellebuyck is going to play. But I've had a tough time reading Paul Maurice's goaltending decisions all year long. I'm not second-guessing his decisions. I'm saying I just haven't been able to read them, so I really don't know what to think today.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason, of course, covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, he scored his second goal of the season last night. That's Nick Petan. It was a nice setup for Mark Scheifele. As we sit here, you know, just about 48 hours or so away from the NHL trade deadline, how much of an asset do you think Nick Petan is in potential trade talks?
You know, he still does some things down low that are a bit fun to watch, and you know, he did score a nice goal last night, although Mark Scheifele, of course, did all the work. But it's going to be tough to see. There's to say there's part of me that thinks that he hasn't shown enough to really cement himself as an everyday NHLer with this organization, and that boy, he'd be a nice piece to send down to really give the Moose a push for an AHL run at a championship there. Having said that, there's also a part of me that thinks that maybe it's time that he gets an opportunity to seek employment elsewhere. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think he has played a little bit better. He's been a little bit more defensively responsible in his own end, and as a fourth line guy, he certainly better be, especially playing with Matt Hendricks, because if you don't hear from Matt on the ice, you're going to hear from him in the dressing room about it. He's a he likes to play a certain way, and he likes tidiness in his own end, and that's what he that's how he thinks. So, I think he's and I said the other day, these are my own words that I wrote the other day. I said his sort of position with the club is a bit tenuous when Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev come back, and then obviously Tanev is probably going to play. If not today, he's probably going to play in Nashville. So I would think that Nick Batan's the guy that comes out. So a change of scenery might not be a terrible thing for number 19.
Jason, here in Winnipeg, in the media, we talk a lot about Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, and for good reason, all four of those players are having great seasons. But Matthew Perreault is a guy, to me, that continues to be underrated on this team. And I realize he didn't pick any points up last night versus the St. Louis Blues. But if you watch that game, and I know you were watching that game, Alex Pietrangelo got really frustrated with Matthew Perreault and even speared him at one point and gave him a cross check. And you could see how he was getting under the skin of Blues player. But is that kind of, the ace that the Jets have in their pocket that maybe enough people don't talk about as being kind of that valuable player that's able to play on any line down the stretch here and especially in the playoffs?
Well, as you've really described him to a T, and he does have some playoff experience that this team, sadly lacks. He hasn't won anything. He played on some capital teams and didn't win, but duck teams. But you're right, and we've seen that he's always first in, and he's hard on the puck, and he makes good, he makes pretty sound plays. He's not a guy that you see making some of those unwise decisions in the neutral zone, and we haven't seen him be that. Say the right word, but he hasn't been that sort of a rat type of player where he really gets under your skin. He'll frustrate you because he's hard on pucks, but he doesn't do sort of silly, unnecessary things with his pick. And I don't know if he was doing a lot of that last night. I just think that Pietrangelo was getting tired of him kind of buzzing around. And you're right, the importance to this club of him being able to play that role is critical, because he is one of those guys that leads. Paul Maurice always talks about leading by example, and he really is one of those guys. I don't think he's a big big spokesman inside the room, but I think that a lot of guys look at him and realize, like, this guy is not big, he's not the prettiest skater out there, but that's how I'd like to model my game, around. And, you think about a guy like Jack Roslovic. Who's not a huge guy either, but he's got wheels. But you'd think that maybe that's a guy that he models his game after. And, I would have thought a guy like Marco Dano would have played a little bit more like that. But Dano at times has shown a reluctance to really get into those dirty areas too. So, and obviously, when you look at Joel Armia, he's got size, but and he does some things like to protect the puck, and he's got some skill there. But there's always a question of his the consistency in that area. So you're right, Matthew Perreault is huge, and especially on the second line now, where he's supplanted like Ehlers and Laine on that second line, and they're going to rely on him not just to be that sort of gritty, in your face. Kind of a little bit of a pass, but also he's going to have to put some points on the board during this final stretch of the playoffs.
Jason, one player who doesn't necessarily get have the same name cachet sometimes as the Bufflins and the Trubas is Josh Morrissey. But to me, he's having probably one of the best seasons of any of the Jets, just in terms of what he's been able to do on that back end. How have you seen Josh Morrissey's year so far?
Without a doubt, I think he's been the most consistent performer on the back end. There were times where I've thought that Tyler Myers has been, their best defenseman at times, and then he's put up some stinkers like he did in L.A. the other day, whereas I don't think I can point to many nights where Josh Morrissey, you go, geez, 44, what was he doing tonight? Maybe a shift or two, but really, how many nights have you really disliked his entire body of work for a night? So you're right, and there's another guy that's played, all 60, and he's like, I thought last night there he looked like he was taking a beating at some shifts, and he's not a big man, although he plays with a bit of a mean streak at times, which obviously helps his game, but he's been really good, and the Jets need him to be real good, because they're hoping to get Jacob Trouba back. They want to go with that six that they kind of started the season with and were hoping they would get through the season with. And then, of course, Ben Chiarot kind of drops down, and Ben Chiarot has been fine. Again, there's a guy that doesn't do anything flashy and is not really a threat to put up any offensive numbers, but he's been pretty sound for this club, but he's, you know, he's probably better served to be that seventh guy in the press box when a Jacob Truba comes back. And then, you have to ask yourselves, is Kevin looking for a depth D, another left-handed shot maybe that can get a little bit more mileage out of him than a Ben Chiarot. But you also don't want to shake up the chemistry of what's been a pretty sound group right now. So I think this next, 48 hours can be interesting.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. The next 48 hours will definitely be interesting. Jason, appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us. We look forward to seeing more of your work in the Winnipeg Free Press.
It's kind of you. Always a pleasure.
Take care, Jason. Thanks again. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets and the Stars. It's hard to believe there's actually a game tonight, given that we're talking so much about the trade deadline. The Jets and the Stars will be 6 o'clock tonight here on this station. Previewing the game is up next. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
And with mom and dad in the crowd, Mark Scheifele gets a hat trick. Getting a standing ovation from their faithful home crowd here, and well deserved. So they had a 3-0 lead in the first. Dallas came back to narrow it down to 3-2 after 40, and then Mark Scheifele with a couple in the third, one into an empty net, puts this one away for the Winnipeg Jets.
Back in October, the first game this season between the Jets and the Stars, Mark Scheifele with the hat trick. It's been since October that these two Central Division rivals have met one another, so not a lot of familiarity despite playing in the same division. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Jets and the Stars, as I mentioned, tonight, 6 o'clock, Munns, Bayak, Edmonds, they'll have the call for you on this fine station. Dallas sitting there in the first wild card spot, only a point behind the Minnesota Wild, so they can leapfrog the Wild into third place in the Central Division with a victory tonight. A key Central Division matchup, the second of three in a row for the Winnipeg Jets against a team that they haven't seen since October, that started the season pretty slowly, but since then has been one of the better teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. It's kind of weird that we haven't seen the Dallas Stars. You expect to see them more, especially at this point in the season, and they're obviously going to see them more over the next month, month and a half. But,
yeah,
you know, the Dallas Stars to me have been kind of a tale of 2 years, because earlier in the season, and you mentioned the last time the Stars and the Jets played, the Stars weren't as hot as they are right now. And, you know, Alex Radulov, for me, has been such a great acquisition for them, not only because what he provides offensively, but he's one of those guys that is able to mix it up. And, you know, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, we know how good those two players are, and John Klingberg is having another phenomenal season, one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. But for me, it all starts with Ben Bishop, and we know how bad the Dallas Stars were in goal last year, and Ben Bishop has, I think, quietly had a really good year for the Stars. And Kari Lehtinen now in a backup role, as opposed to splitting the time with Antti Niemi,
yeah,
has done a really good job. So
Lehtinen going to get the start tonight. Sorry, Ezzy, for interrupting you. Lehtinen going to get the start tonight for the Dallas Stars. We, of course, don't yet know who the Jets goaltender is, but we'll talk about that coming up momentarily.
Yeah, and Lehtinen's numbers have actually been better than Bishop. He's played, you know, half the games or less than half the games that Ben Bishop has played. But, you know, Kari Lehtinen, obviously former Atlanta Thrasher, you know, he just isn't a number one goaltender anymore. And, you know, for Jim Nill, you know, he made the right moves. And, you know, obviously Mark Methot has missed the majority of the season. But mm-hmm. I also think come playoff time, a guy like Mark Methot is going to be very valuable. So I think what you're seeing this year is you're seeing the maturation of certain players. A guy that I've talked about a lot on this show, he's not necessarily a guy that's going to score, you know, 30 goals this year, but Radek Faksa is a very good player. He was drafted the same year that Mark Scheifele was. I really like him. And Matthias Janmark is another guy. If you haven't watched him play a lot over the last few years, even going back to 3 years ago, he's been a very valuable player for the Stars back when Lindy Ruff was their head coach. So there's a lot of scoring up this lineup, and, you know, for me, the secondary scoring is definitely something, you know, that the Dallas Stars are going to have to address. That's why you hear Rick Nash's name a lot. Makes a lot of sense. He used to be coached by Ken Hitchcock. So I wouldn't be surprised at Jim Neal making another move here prior to the trade deadline, because they could always use more scoring.
I mentioned Kari Lehtinen getting the start for the Dallas Stars, and Ezzie, you mentioned how good he's been in sort of a backup role. He's won six straight starts for the Stars, eight of his last nine, and in those nine games, he's only given up 15 goals while seeing his save percentage rise to 923. So Kari Lehtinen, certainly been playing some good hockey as of late for the Dallas Stars and sort of affirming himself as a quality NHL backup after what's been a woeful Stars goaltending tandem between him and Niemi for the last couple seasons. Dave, we've talked about the Stars goaltending. We talked about with Jason Bell briefly. Hellebuck or Hutchinson tonight for the Winnipeg Jets on the second half of the back-to-back?
Had the Jets not given up 15 shots against Connor Hellebuck in that third period, I would have said for sure it was Connor Hellebuck, like without even a question, because I think that Coach Maurice really doesn't have a problem, as we talked about. He's run his goaltenders, you know, over 70 games in season, so that's not a hardship for him, especially with Connor Hellebuck taking off the morning skates to stay a little bit fresher and not mm-hmm. bother getting on the ice and not having put on his equipment, so he's allowing him to kind of, you know, stay just that little bit fresh that he needs to, you know, when he's going a couple of days between games. And so, to me, do you run him back-to-back, especially, Drew, as you talked about earlier in the show, when you know you want him to be fresh against Nashville? So, you know, I mean, I would think that if Michael Hutchinson has been cleared to play and he's ready to go and you have confidence in him and he played well when they won and beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, then you would go with Michael Hutchinson. So I would be inclined to think that Hutchinson gets a start. But again, with Paul Maurice and goaltenders, you're never quite sure what his plan of action is. So I would think that Hutchinson gets a start, but if it's Connor Hellebuck, I won't be surprised.
Yeah, the same question.
I think it's going to be Hellebuck, Dave, and I think the first start that Hutchinson gets is probably going to be against Detroit at home next week.
Yeah.
But right now, I mean, nothing has indicated that, you know, Connor Hellebuck is going to get the start. I mean, right now, it's really speculation, but considering that Hellebuck got the shutout last night and really only had one tough period.
Right.
Sure, early in the first, he was under siege a little bit, but it was really the third period where St. Louis put 15 or 16 shots on Hellebuck that he was really tested. So, yeah, you might look at the shot totals and say that Hellebuck had a really busy night, but I wouldn't say that he had a busier night than the game against the LA Kings or some other games on the homestand.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say is if that ends up being the case, then the question is it Steve Mason getting that next start? Because, you know, he too has been cleared. Now, he's not off IR yet,
sure.
But the fact of the matter is, I would suspect in a week's time, because the Detroit game's on Thursday, if I believe
Friday.
Mm-hmm. So the Detroit game, by that time, you would imagine that Steve Mason would be healthy. So I would suspect that Michael Hutchinson would be sent back down to the Moose.
So you're talking about, you know,
provided, of course, there hasn't been a trade.
Well, yeah, the trade deadline, of course, coming up Monday afternoon, as we've talked about all show long and we'll continue to talk about. You're talking about saying, you know, so Connor Hellebuck theoretically would be, if he goes, forget about tonight's game, but he'll play Tuesday night mm-hmm. against the Nashville Predators.
Yep.
Then he gets 5 days off if he doesn't play Friday at home against the Red Wings. They're not in action again till
right.
next Sunday in Carolina.
Right.
So that's sort of a big stretch for Connor Hellebuck to maybe get some of that all-important rest as we head into
exactly.
the final 20 games or so of the regular season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Dave is going to be wrong, because I think there is a strong chance. I wouldn't say strong necessarily. I would probably put it at 55-45 in favor of Hellebuck starting tonight's game against the Dallas Stars. So, I mean, it's essentially a coin flip, right? I would mm-hmm. just give Hellebuck the edge because he's played 10 games in a row and he's the Jets' number one goalie. And if he's been this successful up until this point, he didn't have very many bad games on that homestand. Maybe, you know, the game against LA, you'd say, wasn't the best game, or maybe the game against St. Louis, but the Jets weren't very good in that game. So it remains to be seen, but I just think based on his usage 10 games in a row, I think
yeah.
it's going to be Hellebuck tonight.
Well, exactly right. It's been a surprise every time it hasn't been Hellebuck in net for the Jets this year, so we will find out later on this afternoon. I'm sure Hustler and Rick will have that information for you. Of course, it'll also be available on IllegalCurve.com or via our Twitter feed at IllegalCurve. When we come back, we head out to Big D. Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News is going to join us, talk more about the Jets' opponent tonight, the Dallas Stars. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and of course our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars. Mike Hajka returns to the program. Mike, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Greetings, Winnipegians.
Mike, a key Central Division matchup between the Jets and the Stars tonight. A little bit of space between each between these two teams. Seven points, but you know that the Dallas Stars certainly have the Jets in sight, and they can leapfrog the Minnesota Wild with a victory tonight on home ice against the Jets.
Yeah, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago. There's a really good chance these two teams play in the first round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Kind of where they are in the standings right now and where they could potentially finish. So I think that makes this an even bigger game. And I think for the Stars especially, they want to see how much better they have become since November. I mean, the Jets pretty much pushed them around in November, and now I think the Stars want to see if they're a better team now.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about Radek Faksa, because I think when you think of the Dallas Stars, you obviously think of Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, John Klingberg, Alex Radulov. Every time I watch him play, I'm so impressed, and he's kind of been a staple of that third line playing center there. And how important is Dallas going to be for Dallas down the stretch and in the playoffs?
I think he's huge, especially with the status of Martin Hanzel, whether he's healthy or not. I mean, we asked this morning, we thought they might put him on the shelf for a month or so, and they said no. They're going to keep trying to, you know, limp him along. And because Hanzel actually is a good checking line center, but because he's not reliable to be there every game, having Foxa is huge. Because, you know, Tyler Seguin's done a good job of trying to become a better two-way center, and I think, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for that. But they need Foxa to go against the other team's best center. And, you know, they've got Jason Spezza, they've got Jason Dickinson, they've got Jamel Smith. They need Radek Faksa to take on that weight. And I think we're seeing more and more that, you know, instead of 14 minutes a game, he's playing 18 minutes a game. And it just goes to show how important he is in that role. Now, the other thing that Ken wants from him is he wants him to turn those checking opportunities into goals. And he's still working on that part of it.
You know, Mike, just how important has John Klingberg been to this team? I mean, it's not often you see a defenseman that high up in his team standings in stats-wise, especially when you have a team like Dallas, which has as many offensive weapons as it does.
Yeah, and I think he's the point guard of the team. He controls the pace. He controls where the puck goes, who gets it. And that's incredibly important in the system that Hitch is trying to run. We saw against San Jose, they were all over the map. And I think John Klingberg has a bit to do with that. Then we saw against Anaheim and L.A., they were much more in control. They were playing a careful game in which they try and move the puck into safe places. And that's huge. John has one of the most interesting numbers going into tonight's game. In 16 career games against the Jets, John Klingberg has 18 points.
Wow.
So you're like, whoa, great, right? This is a defenseman with 18 points in 16 games. He's minus 10 with 18 points. So, you know, that just goes to show that he has a tendency to want to play a loosey-goosey, you know, track meet kind of hockey, and that's not what Ken Hitchcock wants from him. So he's a big deal, especially tonight against the Jets.
Mike Hajka is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, sticking with the back end of the Stars, Mark Mathot had been out of the lineup for really a number of weeks, a number of months. He's made his return, and most people expected he'd return and he would be paired with John Klingberg, because that's how everybody assumed it was going to work from the start of the year. Klingberg has been playing so well with Esa Lindell that they stay together. Mathot has been playing with Steven Johns. How has Mathot looked in his return to the lineup, and do you like the pairing of him and Steven Johns?
I do like the pairing. He's been rusty. And even he's one of the most honest athletes I've ever been with as far as assessing himself. And he says it's just a process. I mean, it's, you know, he's trying to jump on the freeway when everybody else is going 70 miles an hour. And it's been a process for him. But I do like him with Johns. I think what has happened here is Steven Johns is a big, strong guy, but he's also a really good skater. And so, you know, in this whole process of trying to get him into the lineup, it's been difficult for him because he doesn't know what his role is. And with Mathot there, as a steady, you know, stay-at-home defenseman. Johns is now able to use some of his skating a little bit and use his shot a little bit more. So even though Mathot himself is still trying to get up to speed, just his presence there, as opposed to, say, Julius Honka, his presence there allows Johns to be a much better player. And so I do like how that pairing is coming together right now.
Mike, considering the Stars missed the playoffs last year, how hungry are Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn specifically to get in the playoffs and go on a long playoff run here?
You would think extremely hungry. I mean, it's hard. Like, Tyler is giving me a hard time today because I'm trying to ask questions about playoff matchups and all this kind of stuff and playoff this and that. And he goes, look, we got a game to play tonight. Don't talk about the playoffs. So I do think, it, you know, it's hard to be an athlete because, you know, I think, you know, the media gets ahead of the game and everything, and they're just trying to concentrate on their job. But the other thing about Tyler especially is, in these playoff runs that they had with Lindy Ruff, Tyler was hurt. And so he really has done almost nothing in the playoffs with the Dallas Stars. So I would think he is extremely hungry to get there. He's also he also got hurt when he was doing his World Cup for Canada. So he's, like, all these huge games that he's watching all his friends play, he's having to sit them out. He had the Achilles and a calf injury the last time the Stars were in the playoffs. He had the heel injury with Team Canada at the World Cup. So I would think of all the people on the Stars, Tyler Seguin might be the most hungriest to go through a nice playoff run.
You know, Mike, we here in Winnipeg see the importance of having draft picks come up through the organization and get into the lineup eventually. And you guys have a player in Devin Shore who is a 2012 second rounder, I believe, for Dallas. And he's now in his second full season with the Dallas Stars. How have you seen him progress since he came out of Texas and now playing with Dallas?
He's a really smart player. He does a lot of good things on the ice. The biggest problem is that his Corsi, SAT, whatever you want to measure, is horrible. Like, worst on the team, horrible. Was last year, it is this year, and it's really hard to understand why. He's bad at plus-minus just in goal scoring. He's bad at plus-minus in shot attempts. And so he's kind of a little bit of a mystery, I think. And he's been getting minutes, you know, up in the top six on the first power play. So he's an interesting guy, and like we'll always be talking about, all right, where is this thing going? Is a Brett Ritchie available for trade? Is a Devin Shore available for trade? And I kind of put him in that category with Brett Ritchie of they're not exactly sold on him just yet. If a trade came up and another team wanted a good prospect who could jump right into your NHL roster, I think Brett Ritchie and Devin Shore would be in the conversation. So it's an interesting, you know, problem, I guess, for the Stars is figuring out who this guy is. The other problem, I think, is if you look at the team and just look at the roster, they need better top six wingers. And so as we get ready for the trade deadline, is that something the Stars can try and pull off? Could they go get a top six winger and give up a Ritchie or Shore and make their team better that way?
You said the magic word, Mike, and that, of course, is trade, and you mentioned the need for a top six winger. Do you expect Jim Neal to pull a trigger on something, or is it going to have to be the right trade at the right time? He's not what you would describe a desperate man right now?
No, he's definitely not a desperate man. He doesn't like the prices that he's hearing today. I think he thinks that, you know, come 10 a.m. or noon on Monday, the prices might come down a little bit. They're also in a pretty tight situation with the salary cap, mm-hmm. In that I think they could pick up a player around $2.5 to $3 million. And then if they can, like I said, let a Ritchie or Shore go the other way, that would obviously create more cap space. But I think that puts them out on guys like, you know, Vander Kane and Rick Nash. And I just don't think they can pull it off right now unless somebody was desperate and they really wanted to work to make a deal, you know, fit for them. So I think he's patient right now. He's never really been one to just add a big player at the trade deadline. He's talked about, you know, philosophies where it has failed in the past. And then he also looks at guys like, Lauri Korpikoski and Eric Cole were two guys they traded that on years they weren't going to the playoffs. and the Stars got Matthias Janmark for Eric Cole. They got Dylan Hetherington for Korpikoski. And, I mean, neither player performed, you know, well at all for, you know, Detroit or Columbus. And so Jim has that in the back of his mind of, okay, I get that, you know, maybe we have enough, you know, whatever it may be. We have enough young defensemen right now, so we could give up a good young defenseman. But at the same point in time, do I really want to do that if I'm not getting the player I want? Can I, you know, in the summertime, can I use that currency if we really are going to move one of our young defensemen or young forwards? Couldn't I use that currency to make a bigger deal, a better deal, when we're not under the gun so much?
Mike, how concerned? Oh, go ahead.
Philosophy, and I was going to say, the fans, I don't think, enjoy that philosophy. The fans look at Pittsburgh and say, we're going for it right now, and I think it is frustrating for Stars fans, because I think what they said in the summertime is, we're going for it right now, and now they're saying, look, we're going to be patient. We don't want to give away draft picks or prospects. And, you know, that's a mixed message for the fans down here.
Mike, how concerned are you with the way Ben Bishop has played as of late? I know that earlier this week he had a rough outing against the San Jose Sharks, and then a couple of weeks back he had a rough night against the Vancouver Canucks. Are the Stars concerned? Is Ken Hitchcock concerned? Or are they not concerned considering the way he's played throughout the season? He's been pretty solid for the Stars in net.
Yeah, I think that their hope is that this is just a hiccup here and there. When he's bad, he's been really bad. And I think that raises the red flag a little bit more. But he'll mix one of those games around five performances where he's got a 2.3 goals against and a .920 save percentage. And so you're like, okay, should we trust the five or should we look at the one and be concerned? The other thing that's helping them right now is Kari Lehtinen is playing great. Just lights out good. I think he's fourth or fifth in the league in goals against average overall right now. So he's been fantastic. He'll play tonight, which I think, you know, there was a real thought that maybe they'd go to Bishop tonight for a big game. But Kari played really well in Los Angeles. They like what he's doing. And so because they've got that cushion, they're not panicking at all. And I think it's gotten to the point. I would have told you 2 weeks ago that Ben Bishop is, you know, going to play every single playoff game. But I think it's getting to the point now where if Ben has a bad game, Hitch will go right to Kari the next game if he has to. So that's given him some balance, but I will say this, Kari has not got a history of playing well in high-pressure games, and the hope is that Ben Bishop, you know, when that pressure gets higher, that he'll step his game up even more.
Mike, there's a player who's very familiar to folks in Dallas, played three full seasons with you guys, played a lot of seasons here in Winnipeg with the Manitoba Moose, is Mike Keane. It's a reunion night tonight at the ACC, or AAC, sorry. So what exactly does that entail?
Well, it's pretty simple. This is their 25th anniversary in Dallas, so they've done this a lot, where they, especially on a Sunday night, will bring back a player, he'll sign autographs on the concourse. He'll drop the ceremonial opening puck. They'll run a tribute video sometime in the first period. He'll stand up in a suite and wave at people. And it's all, you know, it's all pretty common type stuff. But I will tell you this, Mike Keane has a ton of fans here. The fans love him just because obviously he was a huge part of the 99 Cup team. And then the hockey people love him because he's just a dyed-in-the-wool hockey guy. He's the kind of guy that, you know, you always hear a man's man that, you know, men like. He's a hockey guy's hockey guy. He just, everybody loves him. Hitch was, you know, making some jokes this morning about having Mike Keane back in the building. And he's got so many great stories. And you know, clearly what he did up there in Winnipeg to finish out his career, you know, just shows you how much he loves the game. So it'll be great. I mean, of all the guys who are coming back, and, you know, there's been some really good ones, I think Mike Keane might get as big applause as anybody.
Mike Hyka covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, always appreciate your time. Looking forward to a good Central Division tilt tonight. Hope you have a good time and enjoy the contest writing it.
Yeah, I will. I'm really looking forward to this because I do think the Stars, this is a test. The Stars need to pass this test, and if they don't, I think they're going to start asking themselves some questions.
Well, we will.
It'll be fun.
We'll know by about 9 o'clock Central Time tonight. Thanks again, Mike.
All right, talk to you guys later.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. When we come back, we look back at the Olympic men's hockey tournament, Canada earning bronze earlier this morning with a victory over the Czech Republic. Talk about that. Talk about the semifinal defeat to Germany. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
Simply put, they beat themselves. Now, you know, we know Germany played a game, and when you end up winning, you did a lot of good things. But Canada beat themselves. In the Book of Winning, chapter 1, first sentence, it says, don't beat yourself. And that's what Canada did. Two power play goals for the Germans. That's lack of discipline. Two massive turnovers in the second period on the second and third goals in the neutral zone at the offensive blue line. We had not seen Canada do that through this entire tournament. They were really good with their discipline, playing the game they wanted to play. They were really good in terms of their structural play, their positional play, and not making those mistakes. Well, they made four of them. They made even more than that because now you got to kill penalties. Killing penalties forces you to expend a lot of energy. That takes your skilled players out of the game. So Canada won. They really helped the Germans along, and the Germans took full advantage.
TSN's Craig Button talking about Canada's defeat in the semifinals of the Men's Olympic Hockey Tournament to Germany. That, of course, happened early Friday morning here in Winnipeg. Germany defeating Canada 4-3. Canada bouncing back earlier this morning to win bronze against the Czech Republic. So nice for the Canadian guys to at least get a medal around their neck after the Olympic Men's Hockey Tournament. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We are a part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, and this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Keener Jerseys, KeenerJerseys.com. Canada losing to Germany 4-3, Ezzy. You gave him the kiss of death Wednesday on NHL This Week, pointing out that that was the first Canada had never previously lost to Germany in a Olympic tournament game. You know, did Canada overlook Germany after the Germans defeated the Swedes in the quarterfinals?
No, I think you kind of just answered your question there, Drew. I mean, Germany was coming off of a big win over Sweden, so Canada knew that they couldn't take Germany lightly. And let's be honest here, guys, it's a single-game elimination situation. And when you go down 4-1 after two periods, you put a lot of pressure on yourself. And Canada made it interesting there by getting within one goal. But, I mean, you look at Germany, and, you know, of course, they don't have as much NHL experience as Canada did, but you still had Christian Ehrhoff there. You still had Marcel Gotch out there. And these two players had key roles on this team. And we know Marco Sturm was coaching Germany, and, you know, they had a couple of Canadians, including a Winnipegger. But, I mean, this is an upset of a lifetime for Germany. And you mentioned it. I mean, Germany had never beaten Canada at the Olympics in 86 years. So, you know, it's great for them. But, you know, let's be honest. It was a close game. Germany comes out on top. And Canada wins the bronze. And I got up and watched a good half of that game. And, you know, Canada absolutely blew out the Czechs. You know, the score was 6-4. But, you know, it was a four-goal lead for the Canadians at one point. And, you know, Derek Roy, I don't know if you guys saw this, but, you know, he had to change his jersey because there was blood on his jersey. And he had to end up wearing number 75 with no name on the back. So I thought the Keener Jerseys guys would get a kick out of that. And apparently other countries that had players that had blood on their jerseys also had to wear number 75. So Ray Ferraro pointed that out on the broadcast. Thought that was interesting. But, you know, good for the Canadians to come out of this tournament with a bronze. They don't leave Pyeongchang empty-handed, but I don't think you can dissect this one too much because it's a single game elimination. Remember back in, was it 2006 or 2010 when the Canadians lost to Switzerland? Martin Gerber absolutely stoned the Canadians. So give Germany all types of credit. I'm not going to sit here and you know, say that Germany didn't deserve it because they did deserve to win it. Canada could have easily tied that game up. you know, Matt Robinson got a big goal. That was a beautiful goal that Matt Robinson scored in that game to make it 4-2 Germany. And then they scored later, obviously, to make it a one-goal game and then couldn't get that elusive tying goal. But, you know, overall, a pretty impressive tournament. And considering that the Czech Republic beat Canada in the shootout in the preliminary round, they get revenge on the Czech Republic in the bronze medal game. And as I said, you know, it's just nice, you know, for these guys who no longer play in the NHL to leave with a medal and know that they represented their country the best that they could.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely no doubt about it. You can't besmirch or diminish what these guys were able to accomplish. The fact is that just because you're putting on a Canadian jersey doesn't guarantee you the gold medal. And the fact is that these guys competed hard. And I like the story. I like the fact that to the Germans, I mean, the German Twitter was pretty funny. We were talking about, you know, imagine if Canadians would have beat us in soccer, how we would feel. So be nice to Canadians. Maybe buy them a hot chocolate if you see them in the streets. They're having some fun. And the reality is this is big in Germany. And this could, you know, we always kind of go on these tournaments with this assumption that it's going to be Canada, the U.S., Russia, Sweden, Finland, like five countries primarily who are always going to be the team that wins gold, you know, or silver or bronze. But the fact of the matter is when you have a team that like a German team, that wasn't expected to do what they did. I think it's a good story. I think it's a great story. And I think the fact is that, you know, I mean, maybe they win the gold medal. I mean, could you imagine if out of all of this, I mean, I'm not a gambling man. Could you imagine if you would have bet on Germany to win the gold medal versus any other team? I mean, obviously, I would imagine the athletes from Russia, or whatever they're called, would have the advantage. But again,
the Olympic athletes from Russia.
Sorry, the Olympic athletes from Russia. Yeah. But the fact is that, you know, look, don't ever count out the Germans.
The gold medal game, of course, will be on TSN 1290 later on tonight after our Jets Stars coverage, so you can stay tuned for that. From Team Canada's perspective, Ezzy, did any of those players that played for Team Canada maybe do enough to maybe earn another shot, be it in the NHL or maybe at an AHL level? Anybody stand out to you and say, hey, you know, maybe they've been overlooked, you know, in their career, and maybe now the NHL game is changing a little bit where an undersized player might be able to succeed, that you think that somebody could get a shot? You mentioned Matt Robinson. You know, he's a defender, and, you know, small defenders used to be sort of, you know, not a possibility in the NHL, but now you're seeing a bit of a resurgence of smaller defensemen. Could he get a shot? Or has anybody jumped out at you from Team Canada's performance?
Yeah, Matt Robinson, I mentioned the goal that he scored against Germany. It was a beautiful goal, and he was one player who really impressed me. Chris Lee is another defenseman that impressed me, and you heard that he might be coming back to the NHL last year, but it's really tough to say for me, and, you know, it's not a cop-out answer, but it's tough for me to say if any of these players are going to get a second shot in the NHL. I mean, if you're talking about some of the older players, I don't think Chris Kelly or Derek Roy are going to get another shot at the NHL, and that's, you know, taking nothing away from those two players.
They've had tremendous NHL careers, both of them.
Right. Derek Roy was the other player who scored in that game against Germany alongside Matt Robinson and Gilbert Brulé. But, you know, when you look at some other players, Christian Thomas is a guy, the youngest player on the team. I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Christian Thomas maybe gets a sniff in the NHL. But when you're talking about, you know, some of these other players, like a guy like Wojciech Wolski, mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough to say if he's going to get another crack at the NHL. I thought he was one of Canada's best forwards all tournament. So, again, you know, it'd be nice to see.
Didn't get used a lot in that game against Germany. Willy Desjardins, a lot of people were sort of questioning some of his decisions and the guys he, you know, were sort of leaning on to try and get Canada back into the game after going down by the 4-1 score.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, I look at the performance of Eric O'Dell, who picked up an assist on Max Noro's goal, the winning goal against Team Finland. I mean, Eric O'Dell, I mean, is he going to get another opportunity in the NHL, maybe with an American Hockey League team? I'm not sure right now. You're talking about players that are between the ages of, what, 27 and 33. So, yeah. I mean, at the very least, these players are able to leave Pyeongchang with a bronze medal and know that they gave their all. They were competing for a gold medal. That's what they ultimately wanted to come back with.
Right.
But I think this experience, nobody can ever take this experience away from them. If the NHL was participating at these Olympics, they wouldn't have got this chance. So I think it's great for guys like Wojciech Wolski, Gilbert Brulé, Derek Roy, Chris Kelly. I mean, We talked about Matt Robinson, Chris Lee. Also, we should throw in Kevin Poulin. I mean, yeah. Ben Scrivens was the number one goaltender for Canada. He gets injured, and then Kevin Poulin comes in, and sure, maybe he didn't have his best game against Germany, but he was really solid in net today for them, winning the bronze medal, even though he let in four goals. The Czech Republic was coming at him hard there in the third period. So Kevin Poulin, he picks up a bronze medal starting in net for Canada. He deserves a lot of credit. He's a guy that we've obviously seen in the NHL with teams. Carolina is one of the teams that he played for. So, again, I don't know if, a lot of these players, most of these players I know are not going to get another shot at the NHL, but there might be one or two. But I think right now it's too early to say. But again, the most important thing is they gave their all and they come home with a bronze.
One word answers from both of you. Does Germany have a chance tonight against Russia?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think Russia's going to win, though.
When we come back, Jimmy Haskup of USA Today is going to join us. We'll talk more about the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.